The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Wednesday, the 3rd of July, 2019. On the podcast today, I have Mike Buck, Chief Executive Officer of Petromatad, MATD is the ticker there, and Mike provides an operational update on progress towards its planned drilling program this year. Also on the podcast, Nick Lee, Investment Director at Riverfort Global Opportunities, RGO, ticker there, and Nick discusses their investment strategy. Plus, it's a Wednesday, I have Alan Green on, CEO of Brand Communications, talking about i3 Energy, Eve Sleep, Catanay Innovations, and Bidstack. And as always, I have two lists for you. The top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs. By the way, you can see top 10 versions of both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk, where you'll see a host of other content, videos, podcasts, articles. Check it out. You name it, it's there. voxmarkets.co.uk.
Want to get live push notification alerts whenever a company you follow releases an RNS? Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Mike Buck, Chief Executive Officer of Petromatad. That's MATD. Mike, thanks for joining me.
My pleasure, Justin.
Now, before we get into the news or dig into a bit of news detail, what's Petromatad all about? For someone listening right now who's not heard of the company, can you summarise, please, Mike, what the business is all about?
Okay, well, Petromatad is listed on the AIM market. We're an oil exploration company, and we're focused solely on Mongolia. The company's been active in Mongolia since 2006, and we're about to embark on a multi-well program to find some oil in the east of Mongolia. We are by far the country's most active explorer, getting a lot of support from the government, and looking for a very, very active 2019.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's dig into this four-well program. It's take us through when it's happening this month, and what do you know about this area then?
Okay, well, we raised money last year, $35 million, to drill a six-well program. We've got four wells to go, having drilled two last year, one with some encouragement, one dry. But those were frontier exploration wells in the western part of Mongolia that has been very, very lightly explored. Our focus in 2019 is in the east, immediately to the south of Mongolia's main oil-producing area. And two wells in the north of our Block 20, as it's called. One of them is actually an appraisal of a discovery made on the other side of the block boundary in Block 19 to the north that is operated by PetroChina. The other, that's called the Heron well, which will be spudding before the middle of July. And then the second well in the north is a well called Gazelle. And that is on an exploration prospect about 4 kilometers up dip of proven oil on the PetroChina side. So these are two features we're drilling in a basin that's very well understood, very well known. The petroleum system has been proven and producing since the late 1990s. And so these are wells with very, very good chance of success. The third well in the Block 20 program is being drilled with a separate rig. That is also in the process of mobilizing, and that's going to drill a well called Red Deer Number 1. We hope to spud Red Deer before the end of July. And although that's an exploration well in an as-yet undrilled basin, the basins in this part of Mongolia all share the same geology and structural history. So we have high confidence that there's a petroleum system waiting to be found in that basin. And the prospective resources at Red Deer are quite exciting. 48 million barrels would be highly material and highly value accretive to the company. So we're looking forward to getting that well spudded. The resource potential at Heron and Gazelle. Heron is 25 million barrels. Gazelle, around about 13 million mean prospective resource. So in the three wells that we're drilling on Block 20, we're chasing 86 million barrels of mean prospective resource.
Wow. Yeah, that could be very significant. And so you mentioned the chance of success here. So what are they?
Okay, well, effectively, Heron number one is an appraisal of a field called 1946, mm-hmm. which has been drilled on the Petrochina side, and the northern part of the field has already been developed. So being an appraisal well, obviously that gives a much better chance of success than your average exploration well. I would assess the chance of success on Heron number one around about 75%, so three chances in four that it comes in. Really, the only remaining uncertainty on that well is reservoir presence and effectiveness, but we are a kilometer away from proven oil in a well called 1946-3 at exactly the same structural elevation on the prospect. So very, very high hopes that we've got a good chance of finding oil at Heron number one. Gazelle is a structure as yet undrilled, but very close to proven oil in an area of the basin that's known for improving reservoir characteristics and then therefore better flow rates when you put these wells on stream. We give the chance of success at Gazelle 1 in 2, which is very good for an exploration well. The structure that it's being drilled on is a dead ringer for the best producing structures in the Petrochina area to the north. And then Red Deer, very nice looking structure, but obviously in a basin that's not been drilled yet, we've got to prove that petroleum system is actually working. So there we have a chance of around about 1 in 3 for Red Deer number 1. But, you know, all three of them, very good chances of success, given that it's two exploration wells and one appraisal.
Yeah, absolutely. And so take us through the timeline of these events. How is it happening? In what orders is it happening, Mike?
Okay, so Heron 1 will spud first. The rig is on the move now. The rig is only 20 kilometres away. As I say, we're hoping to get spudded before the middle of July. And should we do that, then we will have results of the drilling and the logging of Heron 1 before the end of August is the plan. We will then move that rig off Heron, and if testing is merited, we are going to bring in a workover rig that is also in the block next door and is already contracted to come. So Heron 1 will have results of drilling and logging by the end of August. Gazelle 1 will spud in September, early September, we hope, and be finished around about the end of September. So we would have the results from the drilling and logging of Gazelle by the end of September. With the second rig, Red Deer should spud before the end of July. We're hoping for results in early September from the drilling and logging of Red Deer. And obviously, the testing will depend on the availability of the equipment once we know that we want to test. But the contractor we've chosen has lots of equipment available, has told us that whilst he might not be able to move immediately, it will be a delay of weeks and not months. So in terms of the way the results come in, drilling and logging results from Heron before the end of August, from Red Deer in early September, and from Gazelle around about the end of September, with testing results to follow once we've mobilised the workover rig and the crew.
Wow, it's a busy period for you, Mike.
It is.
And so what's it like operating there in Mongolia then?
Okay, well, we're getting a lot of positive attention from the government because we're such an active explorer. Mm-hmm. And Mongolia is also in the process of building an oil refinery in the country. At the moment, all of its crude oil production is trucked into China for refining. And so some energy independence is a big priority for the government. So they're keen to incentivize explorers. And we, as I said, are by far the most active. So we're getting a lot of government support for the program. Fair to say the bureaucracy moves rather slowly. And there's a lot of things we need to do in the local communities to make sure that any temporary impact we're having on the local communities or the environment is looked after very closely. So that can take time. I was hoping that we would have spudded earlier in the year than we're spudding now. But using two rigs, we're not in a time bind. There is a drilling season in Mongolia. There's no drilling through the winter months, but the drilling season lasts until the end of November. So we have plenty of time to get our three wells done in Block 20, and plenty of encouragement from the local communities and from the central government. And the fourth well we're planning is either going to be a well back in the east in Block 5, where we drilled last year and got encouragement and proved a petroleum system working on a prospect we call Velociraptor, which is about a 200 million barrel shot with 200 million barrels of upside potential in prospects on either side. That's our current plan, but there is the possibility that with success in Block 20, we will need to move quickly to appraisal to make sure we can get an exploitation license to make sure we keep the discoveries that we've made and get them in production as soon as possible. So a little bit of potential movement on exactly what happens when it comes to Well 4. But as you say, it's going to be a very, very busy second half of the year for us.
Absolutely. Well, Mike, if someone's listening right now, likes the sound of what you're doing and the progress you're making there, but are not following the story as yet, could you give them three quick reasons why they should hit the follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please?
Okay, sure. Well, because we're operating in Mongolia, it's an interesting place to operate, but we've got relatively low well costs. We're drilling wells for less than $3 million, or around about $3 million each. And we've got multiple shots. So for a company of our size to have such news flow, I think is unique. We have a high working interest, 100% in the blocks we're in. And that makes everything we're doing really material to us when you compare it to, say, our current market cap. And the third thing is that, often there's a bit of a curse of the small cap when he makes a discovery and suddenly needs loads of money. We can put our discoveries on stream rapidly in Block 20 because we're right next door to existing infrastructure with spare capacity that we've been offered by the current operator to make use of. So we're able to rapidly commercialize discoveries we make, convert ourselves very quickly from the pure explorer we are now to an E&P company. And we have the inside track on how to operate in Mongolia, and we have a very good idea of what we would do next. So I think those are the three reasons why we stand out.
Marvellous stuff. Mike, good to chat to you. And like I say, busy time ahead, so hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Nick Lee, Investment Director at Riverfort Global Opportunities. That's RGO ticker. Nick, thanks for joining me.
Pleasure.
Now, give us a quick summary, Nick. What is Riverfort Global Opportunities all about, please?
Right. So we're an investment company listed on AIM. We invest principally in junior listed companies. They can be across a number of different exchanges. The ASX, AIM, TSX, and then we can also invest across a number of different sectors. So these currently include natural resources, which was the original one that we focused on, but we've subsequently over recent years added power, technology, healthcare.
Okay.
And where we're sort of slightly different, I think, is that we tend to invest through sort of now anyway, debt and equity-linked debt type structures, as opposed to pure equity, which is what we did really up to the end of 2017, early 18. And the purpose of that is to really provide downside protection for investors through a more of a debt structure than just pure equity. Our market cap is probably about 5.5 million. We've got NAV of about 7.3. Mm. And part of when we changed into the investing more through debt type structures, we teamed up with a group called Riverfort Global Capital, who sort of source and arrange a lot of our investments and have got quite a good track record in the space. And I guess the last point in terms of the overall summary of the company is that, we've got a pretty high quality shareholder base comprising sort of institutions, some family offices and high net worth investors. And I think what's also quite interesting is that, within that group, something like over 30% of the company is owned by two leading small cap investors, Mitan and Canaccord.
I see.
Really the company in a nutshell.
Yeah. So how many investments do you have at the moment?
So we have around sort of 16 or 17 at the moment.
Okay, so investment companies, I'm always a little bit skeptical. I've had mixed sort of results from the past, and I'm thinking here, sometimes I invest in companies. If I can't get direct exposure to a listed company and it's a feel I like, I'll go through an investment company. But some of your investments are actually listed. So why would people choose to go through you rather than just invest directly in these companies?
Okay, so I think it's two things. It's firstly that we invest via a debt type structure. So we're able to invest in a sort of a lower risk, in a way that protects our downside, which a small investor would not be able to do because that wouldn't be available to them. And secondly, you know, by investing into us, you actually get a exposure to a portfolio. So that again reduces your risk of an investment. So it's those two things that are sort of the selling points, I would say, for doing it via us.
Yeah, talk about the debt thing a bit, because I mean, obviously, my understanding is, I mean, obviously, a different kind of debt, but my understanding is most junior resource companies or pre-revenue companies can't get traditional sort of debt, like a loan from a bank, because they don't have any earnings, and so they have to go via equity. What do you provide? What is the debt you're talking about?
Yeah, I mean, I think what we do is we're sort of providing, I mean, I guess it's sort of, we do two things. One, you know, compared to a sort of equity funding for that type of company, we're able to, you know, we have the cash sitting there because we've got, you know, cash resources, so we can give them the money straight away. I mean, ultimately, you know, the takeout can be either, you know, we're helping transition the company to a point where it can generate some cash flow. You know, it's drilling a well, and then that comes through, and they can use the cash from that. But in a number of cases, also we're just sort of giving the company flexibility. So ultimately, they will probably need to repay our sort of debt or our investment through an equity issue, but By using our products, we're able to help them give them flexibility to raise money at the right point, you know, from both a market standpoint and from the company's own information flow standpoint, that makes that funding best for them. So it's sort of giving quite a lot of flexibility to the company.
I understand. And so, what's the instrument you use? Is it convertible loan notes, or how does
it's a mix. I mean, our portfolio really stretches from more sort of let's say senior secured type facilities, so quite conventional. So, for example, we've invested quite a lot of money in Jubilee Metals. Well, that tends to be more a sort of senior secure type facility, because we're lending money into businesses that do generate cash flow. And then you sort of, you know, you get, if you go sort of through the range, you've got then a middle ground, which is effectively a piece of sort of a debt facility, but there's flexibility to convert, you know, one repayment, half, you know, all the repayments into equity, through to probably a more conventional convertible structure. Mm-hmm. So it's a whole sort of range, and you know, and what we try and do is most of our investments are pretty bespoke. So we try and really tailor them to the requirements of the particular company. So it's not sort of one size fits all. You know, we can tailor what we do very much to that profile of the individual company and what they really need.
And what's the kind of returns you're hoping to achieve then,
You're sort of getting, broadly, we would have sort of interest and fees that would give you sort of mezzanine funding type returns. So, you know, probably the sort of 15 to 20 sort of percent, which is sort of pretty normal for that type of product. The IRRs can be geared up, because sometimes, you know, because we're providing funds to provide flexibility, sometimes actually that money gets repaid quite quickly, so that really sort of improves your IRR. Mm-hmm. But that's a rough sort of guide, and then invariably we may have some sort of equity type exposure via some warrants, that sort of thing.
Okay, absolutely marvelous stuff. All right, Nick, well, listen, if someone is listening to this, likes the sound of what you're doing here, but are not following the story, can you give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please?
Yeah. So I think the first thing is that I think we're quite an attractive way for a small investor to play that junior capital space, because through our sort of structure, we can lower risk through the portfolio effect and through the sort of the debt structure arrangement. So, you know, it's a good way to play that space in a sort of slightly lower risk way. I think that because a lot of our, that's really reason number one. I think because also we get income through interest and fees, we're in a good position to, going forward, provide a return to investors, both from a capital standpoint, but also from a sort of income standpoint, because we're actually getting sort of cash income through our investments. And then I think the third thing is that actually, you know, we've not just, as I say, woken up and decided to do this with no track record, because by getting into our agreement with Riverfort Global Capital, we're able to access somebody that's already got an attractive, proven track record in this space. So we're very much sort of piggybacking on their sort of expertise. So again, that's another sort of de-risked and quite attractive investment proposition for a small retail investor.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. Nick, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Okay, all right.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communication. Gerard, Al.
A very good morning, Justin. Very good, and how are you?
I'm not feeling very good.
Oh, dear, why?
I don't know. I just feel really... You know, sometimes you feel a bit... it's almost like a cold, but I haven't got a cold, but I'm feeling dizzy and weak and odd, you know, and I don't know what it is. I mean... I don't know what the heck it is. I'm a bit of a hypochondriac, though. So I was starting to imagine all kinds of really bad things, you know, like having to make anything. So, but,
well, yeah, I just hope you haven't got this proper flu bug that I had a couple of weeks ago, because that's how it started. I just felt a bit listless and weak. And then that was on the Sunday afternoon. We'd just been out for lunch, and I came back and I said to my wife, I'm going to get into bed. I feel awful. And I stayed there until Wednesday. That was, absolutely flat out. So I hope it's not that, mate. That's all I can say.
Yeah, I hope it's not. I've had that a couple of times.
Yeah.
No, I'm only kidding. No, it's not that bad. I mean, I still managed to do my exercise this morning, but it was hard work. And literally, I'm not sleeping very well, but I don't know what it is. But there we are. We are soldiers, Al. We crack on, us men. So
We do, mate. Yeah.
What are we looking at? What's the news out?
Okay, got several companies to talk about here. Firstly, I want to touch on i3 Energy, which, of course, I've discussed on numerous occasions. But basically, I'm discussing it on numerous occasions because there's so much news flow around this company. It's really, really pushing forward. So i3 Energy, market cap of 46 million. Shares have been as high as 122p on the year and as low as 33p. I've had a very good run this stock. I got in very low at just above... It was 25p I got in, and I sold a block out at the top, which was 122p. The shares then fell back based on the discussions the company was having regarding funding, and I went back in again, more or less at the placing price recently. But just to recap, i3 Energy were floated in July 17, raised $7.5 million. Prior to that, they bought into the Liberator field in the North Sea, which is adjacent to a producing field, the Blake field, which is, if there is such a thing in oil and gas exploration, it's almost a plug-and-play solution. The infrastructure is adjacent in this producing field. They've undertaken detailed surveys on the Liberator field. They also acquired another field adjacent to Liberator called Serenity. Between them, there's over 500 million barrels of oil ready to bring to the surface, which has got obviously a vast valuation if you multiply that by the cost per barrel today. The company have over the past 6 to 8 months put in place a complex series of notes and funding arrangements based on the run up to the first drilling campaign, which is taking place this summer, drilling is summer 19, and the company have today announced that they have appointed Baker Hughes to undertake the drilling and the and the management of the field summer 19, and also Baker Hughes will undertake the phase one drilling campaign in 2020. Now, What I like about this is that in the announcement, Baker Hughes have said that they have agreed that £3 million pounds sterling of services will be payable only on the first phase from Liberator Phase One, which and the companies have taken warrants in lieu of that. But that is a massive validation and statement of confidence in the fact that they expect to bring this all to the surface and the sales will take place. And that to me, if you're an investor looking for an investment proposition, when a company that's contracted to do the drilling looks at it and says, yep, it's down there, we can bring it to the surface, happy to wait until you get the first sales from that oil and then we'll take payment. That's a massive, massive statement of confidence in where i3 are right now. And Majid Shafiq, the CEO, reflected as much in his statement today, saying he was pleased in the confidence shown by Baker Hughes. So I mentioned funding. There's a senior debt facility in place. The company a few months ago undertook a placing, raised $16 million at 37p. That's where I bought back into. So very happy. We're now sitting at just below 50p. Broker Canaccord have undertaken research into the company. They have a target of £1.90, which I think, given where the company is at the moment, given everything that's set to take place, is pretty reasonable. Obviously, it's not without risk. Stocks can go down as well as up. I am a holder of this company, and I think it's got a long way to go. And I'm really excited and pumped to hear about the news from the company in regard to the first drilling that it's going to take place over the summer.
Are you pumped, Al? Are you really pumped?
I'm pumped, mate. Yes, I am. Yes, pumped.
I love that. Yeah, I love that. And it also ties in with the oil and gas pumps, I suppose.
Well, of course, yeah. It's there's a link in the in the terminology there. But yes, yeah. Well, if I was an Australian, I'd say I was wrapped. I was wrapped.
Okay, but yeah. I mean, yeah. It certainly is. They are aligning. Seems to be setting up quite nicely, isn't it? They're getting I don't know what the phrase is. Getting all the ducks in the line, but it seems to be happening there. And and the share price hasn't really taken off yet, has it? It hasn't really moved significantly. So I think there's still potential, still time for people to get in there easily, you know? So
I agree. I think it's nicely positioned now. Clearly, we've got the drilling news coming out. But once this company goes into production, I mean, we've got we're at $46 million at the moment. If it goes to the target price of Canaccord, that's going to be about $150-160 million. But there's an awful long way to go, you know. So I think we've got a company that could be worth many millions of pounds sterling on our hands here. And as you say, it's not really made the move given all of the developments that have taken place this year. I think the company is still on the launch pad, and I think we're set for a very exciting second half of the year.
On the launch pad, Alan's pumped. All right, what's next, Al?
Okay, we spoke about Eve Sleep a few weeks back. EVE is the epic code. Shares have been as high as 86p, as low as 5.25p. Share is currently trading at 7.3p this morning. So when we first spoke about them, the shares were trading at 6p. Today
what's
we have
market. What's the market cap there, Al?
Okay, the market cap is 19 million. Now, Eve Sleep. They refer to themselves as a sleep wellness company, so they've slightly moved away from the fact that
essentially, isn't it?
We sell mattresses, that's it. No.
Yeah.
So the company's bought a new CEO in James Sturrock that came in late last year. There was a fund around funding, sort of 12 million funding was raised, and I was going to say Neil Woodford bought 8 million in stock, and the board bought 1 million, but I'm not sure how if Neil Woodford buys into a stock nowadays, it's almost like the kiss of death. But but anyway, the company also appointed the CFO called Tim Parfitt. This guy was the CFO at Loaf Sofas, and wives and girlfriends out there, if you mention furniture, that's probably one of the first brands that come to mind. It's certainly my wife's on at me to get a Loaf Sofa, but that's a long way away.
What's it called, a Loaf Sofa?
Loaf, L-O-A-F.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So basically, a guy with a great deal of credibility in the industry has come in. Company had cash of 17.7 million in December, and cash of 17.8 million in February, which is a good thing. James Stoke has said that they've undertaken a shift in their strategy. They're addressing a different brand positioning, improving their unique selling points, and they've also expanded the range. And I mentioned this last time. They have a campaign that's undertaken at the moment, also on Channel 4, and Channel 4 took shares in lieu of cash to pay for the ad campaign, you know, which again, you know, in the same way that Baker Hughes have agreed to waive their payment until the first oil is produced by 3E Energy. And that's a nice statement of confidence in the company. So the shares have moved up slightly since we spoke. No real news to speak of since then, other than there's a big campaign underway at the moment. If you'll see buses, you'll see advertising on TV and all sorts. So there's a big campaign underway, and there is a trading update due on the 18th of July. So, you know, as with a lot of shares, it's often better to travel than to arrive. So you know, people may well sell out before the trading update comes along. But I think this company is in an interesting position. And indeed, you know, Peel Hunt, the broker, have a price target of 20p on the stock, so who knows? But it's a nice niche brand, a nice company to buy into, and you know, certainly the industry are raving about the quality of the mattresses, and you know, you go to sleep and you've got all the memory foam and everything else, and they're supposed to be very good. So in fact, who knows? One day we might buy an Eve mattress, and then I'll report back.
How have you got so much cash? Where's the cash come from?
Well, the cash came from there was a fundraising last year that came from partly from the fundraising.
The results, the 20 to the 31st of December, they said they got cash of six million.
17.7 million I've got down here, and cash in December.
I'm looking at the current assets now. So on the 31st of December 2018, it's showing cash. The current assets, cash there of 6 million. So where's the rest of it? Maybe it's not there though. But also, they lost a big chunk, didn't they? So what? I mean, is this brand set it apart from other brands? You know, we know retail at the moment is very hard, and I'm just thinking, I understand why the share price is taking a dive, but.
Retail is very hard. I agree, and but I think you can also order these mattresses online too. But I guess it's like everything. You know, you've got to. So beds wear out. You need a new bed. You've got to go and buy one, or do you just keep the bed frame and get a better mattress?
Yeah, but there's loads of bed companies around, isn't it? There's nothing unique about this company, is there? Really? I mean, look, what's the Dreams is the biggest sort of brand out there, aren't they? One of the biggest. And
Yeah, that's a bed retailer, isn't it? That's a big sort of it's a sharing based operation, but I think Eve Sleep rely more on marketing online as well, and just the quality of the mattress and the quality of the night's sleep. I have spoken to somebody who has bought one of the mattresses, and they say it's very good. So
that's not a reason to invest. One person saying, "I quite like the bed; it's quite nice." I can't tell actually I'm asleep when I'm on it, but the fact that I'm asleep is good enough.
It's not a reason to invest, but the fact that Channel 4 took shares in
Loop. Again, we've had this argument before. Listen, it's very hard to make money in small cap stocks. And even someone at Channel 4 who's taking the contra deal probably doesn't make money full time in stocks. So even if they're an accountant, even accountants within small cap stocks don't make money. So, it probably seemed like a good deal to them, but who knows? I would wait, like I said, trading update to see what they're on about. I would, 18th of July, is it?
18th of July. It's a couple of weeks away, isn't it? Just up to 2.5 weeks. But it's just when the company puts out an announcement, say there's a trading update here or results there, then there's always a flurry of activity in the run up to it. And you may want to sort of ride the speculation. You may consider that we've had a good run, so I might sell out before the trading update just in case it is disappointing. As you rightly say, retail is very, very tough at the moment, and we're seeing seeing, lots of big names sort of struggling, in some cases go to the wall. So, but I think the way Eve are positioned, they're a niche brand, and provided they keep their operating costs low and continue to upsell, then the company said its last year results, the core market revenues rose by 25% to 29.4 million. So, you know, there's some of your cash for sure. So they grew sales last time. Obviously, all eyes on the trading update this time, and we'll be looking for profits, reduced losses, EBITDA figures, and everything else.
This time last year, when they announced a trading update with July time, they dropped from 68 pence down to like 38 pence. They lost half their value in one day, and have now ground down to 7.35 pence. Yeah, that's a big loss to turn around, isn't it? 20 million. I know some of that maybe from the IPO, I don't know, but...
It is. But I think so here we are, sort of bumping along the bottom. Effectively, you know, if you look at the chart, that's certainly the case. But I think with the market cap the company has now, I wouldn't expect to see a big move in like that. But of course, you never ever know. But if they have really improved sales, if the campaign has worked and there's a big jump in sales, then we could see a significant amount of upside on offer. But speculation. Shares go down as well as up.
Yeah, post period they did close in cash on the 28th of February was 17 million.
17 million. Then. Yeah. Okay,
so they're not far off cash, but of course, if they're losing, that could be going down. Of course, if they're losing, what's 20? So if they continue to be 20 million, which is what, 1.5 million a month, that could be going down, you see. So I don't know how much they're.
Yeah, that will be going down.
Marv, I think whenever you look at a company, basically, it comes down to two things: are they generating value or are they destroying value?
Cool,
marvelous. What, anything else, Al?
Yes, I want to talk about Cat and Eye Innovation. CTEA is the epic code. Mm-hmm. Now, Cat and Eye has a number of proprietary blockchain products, and they refer to it as high speed blockchain. But they utilize blockchain. In fact, they're one of the few companies in the world actually making money from blockchain in areas other than cryptocurrency. So this company caught my eye some time ago. Last week, they announced half-year results to June 28th. Should say the company is currently worth 1.7 million. It's a real microcap. Shares are traded as high as 0.13p on the year and as low as 0.0425. Currently at 0.55p.
Do you know what I noticed? When I look at a report, half-year or full-year reports, right, when their highlights are all, no numbers, basically all operational, I know they're making a loss. Because when you understand, any company wants to, puts right at the top there what they want you to see,
I've got the numbers here. I know.
See the numbers now. I can see why they're trying to hide them. I mean, they've done 68 grand in revenue for half a year.
68 grand revenue.
They lost half a million.
They raised 995K. Net liabilities now 400,000. They were nearly 900,000 last time around. So losses are reducing. They've appointed a new head of sales, Nick Delacamp, to accelerate the growth. And the company has a range of products that called OnSuite products. OnGuard is a man guarding visibility and proof of work blockchain product. OnSite is a blockchain record. Immutable records, digital inspections, and in January 19th, they secured a contract after a proof of concept test with Firedoor Guardian Limited. They have the on-site product where they have contracts with many football clubs, Charlton Athletic, Aston Villa Football Club, and so on. And earlier this year they signed their first non-football contract with Harlequins Rugby Club. So sales are taking place. The company is growing. Losses are reducing. It's a work in progress, but this is, I think, the company is interesting because it's making money from blockchain in ways other than cryptocurrency. And as blockchain develops and evolves, you know, this is going to become a very important part of day-to-day life. So yeah, it's speculative. So don't expect you know, miracles straight away. But where the company is now, I believe we're going to get to a point over the next year or so where the losses could be overtaken by sales, and we may even see a move into profit.
We may see a little bit of profit.
On the other hand, we may not.
We may not. Yes. Well, I'm judging by 68 grand of revenue and £500,000 losses, they need to up that revenue massively and down this cost. But do you know what? I just generally, though, you know, I mean, not this company only, but you've got to understand highlights are, you know, what a company wants you to see. It's, and I often say this, when you're looking, say you're going to buy a house and you go online to write move or something, and you see everything's looking nice there, and then you realise you're going to book a viewing maybe, and then you realise there's no garden. You know, they didn't mention there's no garden on the thing. They're not going to mention what they haven't got. They're going to mention what they want you to see, you know? See that. So you have to understand, it's always worth looking at this three financial sort of statements that are worth looking at always, you know, the profit and loss, the financial position, which is the balance sheet, and the cash flow statement. Always worth looking at those. Even if they give a massive talk up in their highlights, that's what they want you to read. And they hope that most investors don't get beyond those highlights, you know? They hope they don't read further down. But you should always go further down and look at those three sort of statements, you know, I think. Otherwise, you won't get an overall picture. Marvellous. Yep. What else? Anything else, Al?
Well, just wanted to refer back to Bidstack again. Obviously, we speak about Bidstack more or less every week, but again, on the basis that there is solid, value accretive news flow every week. And today, the company have announced that they've appointed a new non-exec director, a guy called Derek Wise.
Yeah, do you know what I saw this? It popped up. I thought it was Dennis Wise, you know, the ex-Chelsea player. I thought, what? he's a celebrity. They've signed a celebrity. I don't know if he knows much about... I don't know if he knows much about advertising and tech, but Dennis Wise, fair enough, seems like a nice guy.
They've hired Dennis Wise and put him in charge of debt collection. Yeah, that would work.
Yeah, but Derek Wise, he is very wise, it seems, in the world of.
He is, you know, former chief technology officer of Grapeshot, and he's now vice president of contextual intelligence at Oracle Data Cloud. I mean, you know, these are multi-million. Multi-million pound company names and
multi-billion. I mean, let's be honest.
Multi-billion, yeah.
Oracle. Let's have a look at it's a huge company. Let me just try and find. Yeah, go on. There we are. It's so Oracle. I mean, Oracle itself is one of the biggest companies in the world. Yeah. It has revenue last year of $39 billion. And net income of 3.81, total assets of 137 billion, so total equity 45 billion. So it's got 137,000 employees. So data, you know, as you understand, the cloud is pretty much where it's at these days. So that's massive. You know, this guy is obviously well regarded, isn't he?
Yeah.
In our upper echelons of data and tech companies, you know.
I'm just reading his CV. I mean, he spent 6 years in the U.S. Marines, and then started with Enron Broadband in 2000. But when he became CTO at Grapeshot in January 2017, within 12 months, he'd grown revenues by 160% year on year, and he grew the team there from 120 to 250. 6 months later, he was responsible for the product and technology pitch that eventually led to Oracle's acquisition of Grapeshot in August 2018 for $400 million. So, you know, that's you know, clearly this guy makes things happen, and where Bidstack is right now, you know, you've got this in-game technology that's revolutionary, and he's come on board and said you know, he's excited about Bidstack's technology, new and exciting, opens up a whole new market to digital advertisers. And as we've said in prior podcasts, just, you know, when all the big advertising agencies suddenly have this new network to sell to their advertisers, I mean, those revenue streams are vast. As we spoke about last time, the eye tracking company that tested.
Lumen.
Lumen, yeah, tested the BidSet technology. The BidSet technology passed that with flying colors. The results were far better than expected. So every time the news comes out, it's better than expected. And yeah, you know, the company share price is pushing higher and higher. But I think, you know, where we are now, we're still right at the start. I mean, I will say, and I know you have shares in this company too, I also have shares in this company, and I'm very, very excited about the future. So yeah, it's another step along the road today. A key appointment for BidStack. So just wanted to bring that one in at the end.
Yeah, currently VP of Contextual Intelligence at Oracle Data Cloud. Wow, yep. That in itself is a title. I have no idea what that means. That's beyond me. What that means, contextual intelligence. I'm not intelligent enough to understand what even that title means. But he's VP of that.
And it depends what context the intelligence is into, I guess. But you know, suffice to say, he's got a big job with Oracle, and he was, he was clearly instrumental in the takeover of Grapeshot by Oracle in 2018. You know, so that's a key sort of milestone in his career. And now the guy's joining BidStack, and clearly with the contacts he's got, one would expect that he fully expects that he can bring his skill set here to accelerate the growth of BidStack in the same way.
Yeah, so I like what James said, CEO of BidStack, said, given the attractiveness of our technical offering, we've been looking to add a board member who had experience of building and scaling boardless enterprise technology, which has then been acquired by a major Silicon Valley player.
Says it all. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Marvellous stuff, Al, and we'll catch up next week, fella, shall we?
Lovely. Cheers, Jess. Speak next week.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five. Emotion Group, IMMO, at four. But I've done videos. I like that company. I like Martin. He's a holder. He's a business owner, not a high-paid CEO manager. Okay, at four, Proactus Holdings, PhD. At three, Polarian Imaging, POLX. At two, Open Orphan. Those two companies there, I think, have a lot of potential. Do your own research. If you want to find out a bit more information, just search on YouTube, Justin Waite, YouTube, Open Orphan, or you'll see my YouTube channel is a couple of videos there. I've covered those two companies. And number one most followed company again is Lek Oil, L-E-K, ticker there, down 6% at the moment. Okay, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, Codal Minerals, Directorate Change. At four, JD Sports Fashion, AGM statement, really. At three, Innova Derma, trading statement. At two, Thor Mining, Javo's Vanadium Project. And number one is Sirius Minerals. That's K2 2019 Progress Update. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.